Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Some of you may not know this, but October 11th, which was yesterday, is National Coming Out Day, which it's bringing awareness to the millions of people who have challenges trying to tell their loved ones that they are gay, bisexual, or not what I guess people would consider, quote unquote, the norm, which is terrible that you even have to say that. But that's how a lot of people feel. That's what they're thinking in their minds when they say, I'm going to tell people I'm coming out of the closet. Joining me right now is Dr. Tim Seeling. He is a LGBTQ rights activist and actually wrote a book recently called Tale of Two Tims, Big Ol' Baptist, Big Ol' Gay. And he's addressing the importance of this matter. And Tim, I'm so glad you could be here this morning. How are you?
I'm just great. Thank you so much for having me.
So first of all, let's talk about why you would even write a book about this. What are you finding is one of the most challenging things about saying those words that I am gay?
You know, it's amazing that we still fight this battle.
I know.
But we do. And it's deep rooted in our society and certainly brought on by a long history of what we call religious freedom. But, you know, I lived in the closet for 35 years as a Southern Baptist minister of music and a wife and two perfect children, and life should have been perfect. But I knew inside that I was lying and I wasn't being authentic. I wasn't being my authentic self. So at the age of 35, I decided I couldn't do it any longer. I was not being fair to anyone, including myself. And so I came out. And, you know, you can imagine in Houston, Texas, Southern Baptist, how well that went in 1986. It was a different time, of course. So a year after that, I found out there was such a thing as a gay men's chorus. And so I began conducting LGBTQ choirs, which I've now been doing for almost an equal amount of those for first 35 years. So back to your question, I know what it's like to live with that fear of someone finding out who you really are. Mm-hmm. And it's debilitating. And the interesting thing that some people don't think about is the lies that you have to tell, whether they're overt lies or just in your daily life to try to be something that you're not. And it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. And I will say that for me, everybody's afraid of coming out. Everybody who's in the closet is afraid because they make up things. We borrow trouble from the future. Like, well, this is going to happen and that's going to happen. And sometimes it does. For me, it did. But the night I left my home and left my kids and moved into a Motel 6, I felt the greatest peace that I'd had in my 35 years.
Wow.
And then began to rebuild with my family and very close group of friends. And then it exploded into a whole new life that was incredible. So I think that, you know, for a young person, or maybe not young, I've known people who've come out at 70.
Mm-hmm.
I would just say, as I said, don't borrow trouble from the future. Mm-hmm. Don't imagine, you know, young people think, oh my, if I come out, grandpa will die. He'll just die. And actually, there have been no cases known of people dying from this news.
Right.
So I think you're good. And, you know, counting the costs, the pros and the cons, the pros so far outweigh the cons. Yeah. In living a life of truth.
I think this idea of it is so sad that people feel guilt-ridden that they have feelings for someone of the same sex as them. And I think
right.
that a lot of times that people, first of all, go, oh, like you chose to be this way, like you wanted to do this. And
exactly.
And I didn't know if you could give some insight for people who maybe don't have that fully correct.
Yes, I can. Thank you so much for that question. I love it. And I think that one of the important things about coming out is when you come out to someone, even someone who is steeped in religion as I was, they love you. And it then becomes their struggle, not yours. They've got to deal with that, I believe. And most of us believe that we were born gay. Mm. I worked for 35 years to try to not be that.
Right.
I begged God to make me straight. I would have loved to have just lived that perfect life and continued, but God didn't. And my parents, as I said, were both Southern Baptist professionals, came to the point that they said, if God is omnipotent, all-powerful, then God can change Tim. So we're not going to try. Wow. So they simply prayed for me, not that I would change, but that I would be happy.
Mm.
And that was an incredible testament. They're both gone now, or else I would call them right now and thank them. So, you know, people like to say it's a choice because that's convenient mm-hmm. for them.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it easier. Oh, they just want to have sex with someone of the same gender. Nope, that's not. If that's all it were, I think it's funny because straight people don't make decisions for the most part, based on having sex with somebody of the opposite gender.
Sure.
Nor do we. That's not the way our lives are driven.
Right.
And I think that straight people, you know, have glorified that part. I think what I would say to a young person or an old person who is struggling with this, this is a great time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
National Coming Out Day simply gives us, you know, a marker, a date marker. But you got to sit in a room with yourself, no one else, and come out to yourself. And if you believe in God, that's the next step. Come out to God and say, okay, God, you made me this way. Now help me through the next step.
Mm.
And if you believe that you were born that way, then you need to come out.
We are so quick to judge. And you know what I think is interesting about judgment is that straight, gay, bisexual, whatever you are, we all judge. We all do it. We do it on a daily basis. We see somebody who walks around with their hair that was cut, and immediately I could tell you that 9 out of 10 people in the room have already judged them before they've even opened their mouths. And you know what? It's sad that we live in a world where that judgment has only become more and more of the majority. And it's unfortunate that people who belong to the LGBTQ community even have to be part of a community. I mean, it sounds crazy to me that we have to literally say the straights versus the LGBTQ community. Like, why are we all just one? You know, and it's maybe I'm naive to say that out loud, but to me, it just seems like, you know, in kindergarten, you tell each other to share each other's snacks and to respect one another. And it's just all of a sudden, as you start to grow opinions and you start to be engaged with the world, we start to judge each other. And all those things that we learned in kindergarten, they just go away.
That was awesome. Three things. We like to be, and from the very beginning, we like to be in the in group. We like to fit in. Nobody really wants to be different when you're younger. And so then as you grow, then you do not want to be other. That's the worst thing you can be. And that can be race. It can be religion. It can be orientation. Just other. You know, those others. The second thing is someone told me a long time ago a great line. I was complaining about somebody and how blah, 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 and they got all these opportunities. And this person looked at me and said, Tim, keep your eyes on your own yoga mat.
I love that.
I've used it in so many settings of just what you're talking about of judging. You know, like, oh my gosh, look at that person who didn't take a bath. Well, just look at your own yoga mat and, you know, check how you're smelling today. And it really does just keep focused on your own stuff. And, you know, that was really important to me, even though it was said sort of in jest, I've actually used it.
Yeah, I think it's a big message that I think it really just can't be shared enough. And again, Tim, tell us really quickly about your book that you released and where can people find it? Yeah, because I think it's a great message.
Thank you. The Tale of Two Tims, Big Old Baptist, Big Old Gay is about a life divided in half between religion and the LGBTQ community. It's available on Amazon. There's an Audible audiobook that I read myself, and it's on iTunes and all those places. So, yeah, it's a funny and really sad kind of romp through my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Tim Selig, we appreciate you coming on, giving us this insight this morning, and God bless you. I think that if more people could encourage others to just be them and not worry about what people think, even though it's a scary world. My God, it's a scary world, and who am I to say it's not?
It is.
But I think the more people who can be outright and just be who they are and know that they will support others who are maybe just kind of treading very cautiously going forward. I think you spoke volumes to someone today, so I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you, Melissa.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and did you know that 1 in 8 women across the United States will develop breast cancer in her lifetime? In fact, this year alone, for the year 2020, our doctors are estimating more than 270,000 new cases of invasive breast cancer will actually be diagnosed in women across the U.S. And that doesn't even include the almost 50,000 new cases of non-invasive breast cancer. And joining me right now to talk more about this is Dr. Susan Baubel, who is the System Chief of Breast Surgical Oncology and the Breast Program at Nuvance Health. And Nuvance Health overlooks hospitals in our region, including Norwalk Hospital and Danbury Hospital. Doc, thank you so much for coming on this morning. How are you?
I'm well, and thank you so much for doing this and getting the word out.
Absolutely. I think one of the big things and one of the reasons that this year more than ever, it's so important that we talk about this, Doc, is the fact that we're living in a pandemic, right? So people are scared to even go to their doctor's appointments, let alone to get screenings done. What can you tell people if they have anxiety over this?
You know, it's such an important point that you just raised. This COVID pandemic has increased anxiety for everyone, and it is true. Just going to the grocery store increases anxiety, never mind going to your doctor's office. But going out and taking care of your own health is even more important during a crisis that we are in throughout the whole country. So screening for breast cancer, which is done with the use of a mammogram, which is really a specialized imaging test of the breast. It's basically an X-ray of the breast with very low dose radiation. But the goal of a mammogram is to detect early breast cancers. It won't prevent a breast cancer. That's not why we do it, but we do it to diagnose early breast cancers. And the earlier we can diagnose a breast cancer, the easier the treatment for a patient and the better the outcome. So that really is the key.
How early can you get or should you suggest people getting a mammogram?
Regarding age, we really recommend women at 40 years and older get a mammogram every year. Now, a lot of that will be based on your family history. If your mom had breast cancer at 42 years old, we don't want you to wait to 40. We want you to be getting that mammogram about 10 years before your first degree relative was diagnosed with breast cancer. But for average risk women, which remember, 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer. So somewhere around 12% risk in your lifetime of getting breast cancer. That's a pretty high risk. And that's why we do mammograms at age 40 and older.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Dr. Susan Baubel this morning about Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which is October. And as you heard her say, 1 in 8 women in the U.S. will develop breast cancer in her lifetime. Now, Doc, has it always been that high? That's a very high percentage of women who will experience breast cancer.
Yeah, the numbers are pretty steady.
Wow.
And it hasn't changed. Those numbers started to increase really when we started recommending yearly mammograms. It doesn't mean those numbers weren't there before. We
gotcha.
Just weren't diagnosing the cancers. So since we've been doing regular mammograms on women, that's been the number. Now, unfortunately, what we are seeing almost worldwide is that fewer breast cancers will be diagnosed this year. And it doesn't mean that there are fewer breast cancers out there. It just means that women are not getting mammograms, mm-hmm. so we're not diagnosing them, which translates into, unfortunately, women may be diagnosed at later stages because of the delay in getting their mammograms.
Yeah, so this truly could be a matter of life and death, which is why we really need to get screenings done immediately. Now, Dr. Ballbaum, the other thing that I wanted to touch on with this is that, you know, I know you had said on average you should be about 40 when you start to get your mammograms done. Is there anything that we can kind of keep an eye out for at home? So I'm 30, and I know my mother has never had breast cancer. My grandmother did, however, and I don't know if there's signs or things I should be checking for while I'm at home.
You know, it's a really important thing as to what we should be aware of. Mm-hmm. And number one is just know what your breasts look like. And then is there something different? And one of the things that women say all the time, and I completely understand it, is I feel my breasts, I examine my breasts, and I feel lumps and bumps, and it just makes me anxious, and I don't know what I'm feeling for. Mm-hmm. And that is true for every single one of us. So the key is to know what your norm is. And then it's not knowing what every lump and bump is. If you've had that there for 5 years, that's your norm. It's knowing what is new or different, mm-hmm. and then going and getting that evaluated. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really important that if you see any changes, if you feel anything different, to go to your doctor and get that evaluated. Mm-hmm. Don't think, I'm too young to have breast cancer, I'm 30 or I'm 32, and I know this lump has been there for a few months, but it can't be cancer, I'm only 30. That's not true. Mm-hmm. So if there is something there, if there is something different that you are noticing, please go get that evaluated.
And Dr. Ballbaum, is there anything that we can do to keep up on our health? Obviously, you hear about the typical eat well and exercise, but anything in particular that helps with decreasing your chances of breast cancer?
No, there's not many things in our control. Mm-hmm. There are three main things in our control about reducing our risk of breast cancer. One of them is maintaining ideal body weight. Let's face it, during a COVID pandemic, really hard not to gain weight. So we do have to be aware of that. And it's not just what we're eating, but how much we're eating. So we have to watch both of those things. But maintaining ideal body weight is really important. And that's based on something we call BMI, or body mass index. You can just go plug that in to your computer, look up BMI calculator and find out your BMI. And it really takes into account your weight and your height. And that's how we come to the BMI. It's a complicated formula, but go look at it online and you can figure out your own BMI. And we want our BMI somewhere between 19 and 25. Above that, we're overweight, or even higher BMIs, we get into the obese category. And that does increase our risk of developing breast cancer. So really, you want your BMI below 25. The other thing in our control is exercise. Now, exercise will help with our weight, but it's not the main factor of our weight. About 80% of our weight is going to be based on what we eat and how much of that we are eating. Mm-hmm. So I hear people say all the time, oh, I don't have time to exercise, and that's why I'm so overweight. Not really. It's what we're eating and how much. Mm-hmm. Then about the rest is exercise, but exercise will also decrease your risk of breast cancer. And then the third thing in our control is alcohol. What many people don't realize is that alcohol is actually a risk factor for breast cancer. The more alcohol we drink, whether it's wine, beer, hard alcohol, however we want to think about it, alcohol intake is a risk factor for breast cancer.
Wow.
I'm not saying never have a drink, but we really should do that in moderation. Again, during COVID, we're finding that people are drinking more and more, mm-hmm. but we really do need to be aware of that.
Well, Dr. Ballbaum, thank you so much for giving us some of this insight. And again, just kind of pushing the fact that we need to get our screenings done. We need to be up on this because it really could be a matter of life and death. So, Dr. Susan Ballbaum, thank you so much for coming on this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Schedule your mammogram today if you're over 40.
Well, your wish was granted. I think my husband's going to pop on in the 9 o'clock hour to answer the coveted question, what is it like being married to me? But on a
more broad scale? That's a question I think a lot of spouses don't actually know the answer to. When do you ask your spouse, what is it like being with me? I don't know if anyone wants to know that answer. But joining me now to kind of crack this wide open is our marriage consultant, Bob Donovan. Bob, this one cracks me up. This is a good one. I like this topic. How are you?
I'm good. Now, I think it would be a good idea to kind of bring Garrick into this conversation. What do you think? No?
I just talked to him on the phone during my newscast, and he is driving Chase to my mother's house before he goes to work. But he is going to pop on. He's listening to the show right now. So he's going to listen to what you have to say, and then he is going to pop on the air in the 9 o'clock hour to share what it's like being married to me. So I don't know what he's going to say, but... I feel kind of confident. I feel semi-confident. I'm finding my confidence dropping by the minute, but I feel okay. I don't know.
Just allocate plenty of time for that conversation.
Exactly. I'm like, be thoughtful, honey. Really think about this one. I'm giving you a good 40 minutes before you come on. So, but it is a good question, though, Bob, because you know what? Mm-hmm. It's funny. We all have these different backgrounds. We are polar opposites in some ways. And yet sometimes we have this thought of, if you were more like me, our marriage would work. But it's funny because that's just kind of backwards thinking a little bit.
Yeah, totally right. And what's actually more accurate is when we date, our differences attract one another to ourselves. People
yes.
that are extroverts are attracted to introverts and so on, right? So our differences attract us, and then we get married. I thought I would be a great husband until I got married.
Isn't that so? Wow.
Yeah, because our marriage, you think about it, right? The marriage relationship really depends. It's a give and take. And if we're honest, our human nature are more takers than givers. So it does expose more of this self-centered side of us. So after a couple years, sometimes months, but often a couple years, these differences end up feeding some thoughts into your mind like, boy, if Karen was more like me, if Karen thought about problems like it, if Karen responded like me, if Derek did this, our marriage would be easier. We really do think that. But we don't talk about it. And then we kind of like ruminate on these things, and they actually build up these barriers when we really need to take an honest, objective look at the kind of spouse that we are. And, our human nature doesn't allow us to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Then
yeah.
Growing up, we don't. Or we've had bad experiences with people telling us, well, let me tell you what's wrong with you, like with our parents or friends
sure.
or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
So you got that working against us, too.
But then how do you change that mindset then, though, Bob? Like how, like you said, in a couple of months or even a couple of years when you have this mindset of I wish they did this and then we wouldn't have these problems, or I wish they thought like this and maybe we'd be on the same page, or God, why aren't they mind readers? how do you change that mindset? Because you're right. All we were worried about is ourselves our entire lives. But then when you enter a marriage, it's not just about you anymore.
Yeah, and I love what you just said, that a lot of not to generalize, but a lot of women think that men need to be mind readers. So, and a lot of men think women should be more problem solving like that. So we
yes.
get these
mm-hmm.
things going on. What really we really need a couple of things. One is you need a heart ready to receive. You really need a humble heart, not a prideful heart. And at the core, that's what's going on here, that our selfish, prideful heart are not allowing us to look at ourselves the way that we need to look at ourselves from our spouse's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is to have a heart that is humble and open and ready to receive what you might not want to hear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
first. I mean, secondly, you really need to communicate this properly. So one thing I would say, and this is, I thought about this because I know there's some people out there thinking, well, you know what? Let me ask this question, because I'll get a chance to tell him what I really think. Or
that's dangerous.
You see? You got to check your motivation in this question. Like,
mm-hmm.
in fact, I would say that if you really want to improve your marriage, and this could be a marriage shifting moment and mm-hmm. question, but don't go in with the motivation of wanting to tell your spouse what's it like being married to them. Go in even not even expecting that answer.
Yeah.
Just go in. Here's what I want to know. I mean, that's really, it's getting your heart in the right position to receive and to hear what it's like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To get more granular with this, I mean, that's kind of broad, but really think about, what is it like having a conversation with you?
Oh, wow. I don't even want to know.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I can comment on that, but I'm not going to handle that one.
You watch it, Bob Donovan. You watch it, Bob Donovan, our marriage consultant. So, yeah, no, that is a very good question, though. You know, what is that like having a conversation together? You know, what is that like? Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, and I know, I'll just to make it more personal, like one of the areas that Karen, my wife Karen, has expressed to me is that, you know, she loves to hear me talk about, like, deep heart stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, I was the only child, and I wasn't good at that. I had to really, and I still to this day learn how to do that. So what's it like being married to me is to a person that she calls me jokingly the emotional vault. So someone that's not good and comfortable at sharing my inner feelings. So,
right.
You know, I had to be ready to ask that question and to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
So you really need to put your heart in a position. It could be a marriage shifting moment, but your heart has to be in a humble place to hear that answer.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, Bob, this is a conversation that it sounds like really, it doesn't have to be something you have a year or two after being married. You could be married for 40 years and go, hey, you know what? Maybe we should have this conversation, because whether you're empty nesters and you're just trying to figure out how to go forward with this new life without kids, or maybe, you know, you've moved or you've lost your job or you're in a shift of your life, you know, years and years and years down the road in your marriage, it's still worth having the conversation.
Yeah, I would echo that and even and highlight that, because I think that most couples get complacent and lazy.
Mm.
So I think your first couple of years that you're eager and you'll have these conversations. You know, kids come, raising kids and all that. So year 15, year 18, you kind of get lazy. This is a really good date question to ask, just to go out and have this conversation
mm-hmm.
about that. So I would say it's more important for couples that are married longer term than for couples that are married just a few years.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
I like that. Well, Bob Donovan, if anybody wants to reach out to you, ask the questions that they have on their mind about their marriages or relationships, how can they reach out to you?
Yep, be great. Yep. So it's B Donovan, D-O-N-O-V-A-N, at blackrock.org. And I'd love to exchange some ideas on this.
All right, Bob Donovan, we always appreciate getting your insight, and I'm very anxiously nervous, excited. I don't know how to feel about my husband's insight on this, but that'll be coming up in the next hour. So we thank you so much for coming on, and we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Sounds great.